David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 328. I'm your host, Steve Raker, down in the comic book bunker where spring is about to be sprung, but still pretty cold down here. Joining me, as almost always these days, is WWX Kevin up in the Northlands, and Andrew the LA Rabbit as far out west as you can go.
Down in the Southland.
Wow.
The Wastelands.
My head's been implanted into the Supreme Intelligence.
Well, and winter is almost breaking, boys. I can see the sun. Theoretically, it's supposed to be warm this weekend.
Here, too. It's going to be like 50 tomorrow. Woohoo.
Scorching.
You can find Marvel Noise on Facebook. Get new episodes there. You can find Marvel Noise on Twitter. Get links to new episodes there. You can find Marvel Noise and past episodes on MarvelNoise.com. We're happily part of the Deliberate Noise Network that features other fine shows such as Derek Coward's Comic Book Noise and our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, where we talk about the indie comics that we are digging on. But tonight we've got a special... episode, a special Marvel Tales type segment where we go back and look at an entire storyline here. This time we are going back to January through April of 1992, guys.
Ooh, this is timely.
Comics
back were... not that timely.
Back when comics were good.
And $1.25. Wow. So you could afford to pick up the other books in a sprawling... crossover, even if they weren't titles you were normally reading. Heck, you could afford to pick up the whole line.
Not me.
No?
I got my, like, $3 or something. I got to pick up Darkhawk, Spider-Man, and something else. I'm like, I don't have money for this crossover.
Sleepwalker.
No, I didn't pick that up. It was probably a second Spider-Man title. It was probably Spectacular, Amazing, and Darkhawk.
This crossover carried across 19 issues, over 7 titles, over 4 months, as I said in the beginning of 1992. It came from a Mark Gruenwald plot idea that was intended to be a storyline in his Quasar book, but the Avengers group editors and writers decided to develop it into a group-wide crossover. So
you mean they popped it out like they do in modern times?
They did. And it went over all Avengers-related seven titles. Avengers, Avengers West Coast, Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, and Wonder Man and Quasar, who both had solo titles at the time. I mean, I think it's kind of cool that they did it in the regular books and didn't make it something separate with an Omega and Alpha, you know, special lead-in issue or anything. And also, I think it's cool that they kept the regular creative teams. It was the regular artists and writers of those books just doing something together, pulling off a stunt together, rather than it being something that came from somewhere else.
I'm reading out of the trade paperbacks, and yeah, they have extra Quasar issues and an extra 2 issues of What If.
Ooh. Well, we'll get to that, though. You can find these issues collected in the Avengers Galactic Storm trade paperbacks, Volume 1 and Volume 2 from 2006. That's what you're reading, Kevin?
That's what I'm reading.
And I'm reading from the Avengers Epic Collection, Volume 22, Operation Galactic Storm, the trade paperback that has it all in one volume from 2017. And the individual issues are also on the Marvel Unlimited digital service.
That's where I'm reading it. Although I wish, now that I've read the event, I kind of wish I had the epic. I was debating buying it, and I was like, no, I'm just... Because they sometimes on the Unlimited, they package them as events, but this is not, so you have to kind of flip around from one to each. And I was like, oh, and the epics always have cool back matter.
Yeah, not much in this one. It just has the a couple of Marvel Age articles that related to the, you know, promoting the event. But along the way, like in between issues, they have good, you know, because it went over 4 months, they had a few different house ads as the event went on. And it's kind of cool to see those different looks, promos. So 1992, starting off this 19-part sprawling crossover, is Captain America issue number 398. Written by Mark Gruenwald with art by Rick Levins and Danny Bullinati. In this issue, Rick Jones has dreams involving Captain America and a Kree Supreme Intelligence type being.
And that is really creepy. The Supreme Intelligence head on Cap's body.
And we know Rick had all these connections to the original Kree Skrull War with the Supreme Intelligence and stuff, and back in the late 60s, and brought forth the Golden Age heroes at the end of that and all that business. That was all weird. So Rick calls Cap, and they meet to discuss this. And over lunch, they are attacked by a foe unfamiliar to them, but familiar to readers of the X-Men books. It's Warstar of the Shi'ar Imperial Guard from X-Men lore.
Again, it's so weird. The guy with the little guy within the guy.
I gotta say, this is 92 is still, even though I'm exiting comics, it's still my sweet spot with the thought balloons, the compressed storytelling, the various plots that are weaved in and out, and ongoing storylines are continued. Yeah. I really like that. So even though I'm picking these up out of nowhere, some of it's triggered because I was reading Cap. I wasn't reading Wonder Man at the time. I mean, I may have read an issue or two, but I wasn't regular because I was getting out. But I remember Cap because there's some continuing stuff in there. The other thing I like, and it's very, very pedant, but they place their order for scrambled eggs. But yet, when they get attacked, it's clearly over easy eggs that are being. I'm like, you know, that's a time when you're like, the letter just needs to go in, and or I wonder if by then it was too late because he lettered the page before, and then he's like, oh well, who's gonna notice that the eggs are wrong?
Take these back, and take this Shi'ar Imperial Guardsman with you.
I figure that's why the guardsman attacked and smashed. He was angry that they messed up Cap's order, so
must eliminate. I mean, I think it's so fun to have these guys who are like, you know, unfamiliar to the Avengers, but it reminds me of when like Gladiator showed up in Fantastic Four 249 and 250 when Byrne brought in Gladiator, and it's like, here he comes and he's mopping the floor with the Fantastic Four. They've never encountered the Shi'ar and all this, and that's fun.
Well, we're not too far off the classic event where all the heroes swap villains, of right. Which I have the omnibus of.
The outcome of Cap 398 is that Rick gets captured by the Shi'ar.
Oh, no.
Chapter 2 is Avengers West Coast, number 80, written by Roy and Dan Thomas, with art by Dave Ross and Tim Dzon, who are an art team that I enjoyed quite a bit back in the day, and it's one of those, whatever happened to Dave Ross? Rick Jones is being interrogated by some of the Shi'ar's Imperial Guard, one of them being Oracle, the one who's the, you know, telepathic, and she extracts from his mind information about his time partnering with Mar-Vell, both for her benefit and ours as the readers, so we get a reminder of how he used to be partnered with Captain Mar-Vell, and we are given their backstory and the history of the aforementioned Kree-Skrull War.
He's an important dude.
Yeah, so, you know, he's more than just the guy with the ham radio, you know? or the guy with the harmonica sitting in the
How dare you denigrate the Teen Brigade, Steve?
Well, isn't he the guy with the keyboard and the internet now?
Right? He always has the long hair, though, just so you know that he's... Except when he was Bucky for a hot minute, Cap made him cut that hair short.
And he keeps himself...
That's creepy, Cap.
But he does keep himself in very good condition, I must say. Rick Jones is doing those sit-ups and push-ups and everything.
Well, what else is he going to do at the Pantheon headquarters?
Rick takes this group of the Shi'ar Imperial Guard to where he first encountered Mar-Vell's Negabands. And they awaken and battle a dormant Kree sentry there, as well as encounter and battle the West Coast Avengers.
Yeah, I don't like mind control bad guys. They're always the worst.
Yep.
You don't like Mesmero?
Gene is creepy. I understand why the regular populace is afraid of mutants.
I am too.
I like the panel in here where Iron Man and U.S. Agent are holding up this massive gun.
Rick is rescued by the West Coast Avengers, but the Shi'ar escape. But Quasar is put on their trail. You know, we've got a guy. We've got a cosmic guy. But
this is another thing about, like, the eggs. Like, Quasar isn't wearing a mask here, but later on, like, he's wearing this, like, breathing apparatus. I'm like, wait a second, did they not
figure this out
or someone forgot?
I don't think it's a breathing apparatus. I think it's so that he can communicate, because remember, that's when he's teamed up, and he needs that. He doesn't need it to breathe. You need air to talk to the other Avengers.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing, but then I realized when he's by himself, he can talk, and whether he talks out loud or internally, it doesn't really matter, but he needs something to communicate to the other Avengers, because...
In space, you know, no one can hear you scream.
Or talk.
But
were you guys reading the Quasar? The Quasar series is kind of new to me, so I'm not
I love this book. Mark
Thor.
That's weird that Thor can yell in space. Cersei needs the device. Vision. Anyhow, sure, I'll give you your no price.
The Quasar book is great. I can't recommend it enough. It had it was Mark Gruenwald doing a cosmic book. And just like those backup stories from What If, the first volume, when he would do those like the Watcher tales from around the Marvel Universe, and they'd go through the backstory of the Celestials, and Gruenwald loved all that Marvel cosmic stuff, and the hierarchies, and the continuity, and all that business. So he's taken a new, a character who wasn't a new hero on Earth, but was new to the stars, and putting him out there, and getting him to, getting to see all that stuff through his eyes. Some great storylines. Then it becomes Greg Capullo's first regular assignment. And the art takes a nice big jump for the better. And because he was an Avenger, it gets tied into a bunch of the different events and stuff. So it becomes a significant book. I really enjoyed it a lot.
This is the issue that tricked me, because I got a number one that said Operation Galactic Storm Part 3, and I'm like, but it's a first issue.
Oh, of Quasar?
Yeah, because it's the whole newsstand, direct market.
Well, that's the
mix
thing.
Up.
Quasar was a direct market only book, but all of the other books in this event that it crossed over through were all newsstand books. So they decided to just put out singular copies of Quasar 32 through 34 and had them be titled, numbered Quasar number 1, number 2, and number 3. Isn't that funny?
It's pretty funny. But as a kid, you're just like, I don't understand. Like, there's no way for you to, you know, it's more difficult.
Also, with these, this time in the Avengers, it's funny because Cap and Iron Man are clearly shown that there's friction between the two. And it's because this is all just after the Armor Wars, where Tony went back to take his technology from all the different villains and heroes and stuff. And Cap and Iron Man bumped uglies on that. And
what about U.S. Agent in here? He's pretty bad.
And also, Captain America views the West Coast Avengers kind of as a lesser Avengers, if they're Avengers at all to him. And there's a resentment between the two teams. There's like an East Coast, West Coast rivalry thing.
Well, as much as I love the West Coast, is anyone really holding up the West Coast Avengers as, like, the real Avengers?
But they're Avengers.
No, but they're like, so the other Avengers should be the East Coast Avengers then, not the Avengers.
Oh, please. So, you guys are all, also think the Great Lakes Avengers are on equal footing with the...
I feel like I've missed some history here. When we went into outer space and have, like, the StarCorps Observatory, I'm like, wait, what? I need a footnote.
Oh, yeah. Well, Quasar is following the Shi'ar who are escaping with the captured Rick Jones, right? Or, right, no, wait, no, they got back Rick, right?
Well, this is the problem is they got Rick back, but right. In Wonder and,
but
Man.
The, but the Shi'ar...
Yeah,
the Shi'ar are escaping after Rick did get rescued. All right.
Yeah.
So the Avengers need to chase down the escaping Shi'ar, so they send Quasar after them because he's their space guy, but they evade him because of this big solar flare. So that takes us to that Quasar 32, or number one, depending on if you bought it at the newsstand, that, as I said before, was written by Gruenwald with art by Greg Capullo and Handy Candelario, or... Handy. He is Handy. He was the inker. It's Harry Candelario. And on Earth, Cap assigns Wonder Man to protect Rick Jones, just in case he gets targeted again. Also, Quasar has to investigate this odd solar flare activity. He gets alerted to intruders at Mar-Vell's tomb, which is on a satellite off of Titan, which is a moon of Saturn. And since Mar-Vell his predecessor, he's got to go check it out.
On a side note, I love that the inside of his cape has all the star, like the, it's the whole eternity thing.
Yeah, I love
they
it.
Do it. So the yeah. It's a cool, and he looks very clean cut. Like this is a younger hero, angular, like still muscular and everything. But I thought they did a lot of work on the fun character design.
Quasar finds the ex-Avenger Star Fox there at Mar-Vell's tomb, and they foil two Kree, Dr. Minerva and Captain Atlas, from robbing Mar-Vell's tomb. Another contingent of Shi'ar Imperial Guard shows up just then and attacks them.
Yes, they get attacked by the Legion of Superheroes, Steve.
Oh, wow.
Designed by the same guy.
Yeah, there's no mistaking some of those looks to it, but a fun mix, and Capullo and the rest of the art team seem to be having a lot of fun with all these crazy characters and blasts and explosions and everything. Just, it's very packed. I like it.
In the melee, Captain Atlas sneaks off and purloins the Negabands from Mar-Vell's corpse. They left the Negabands on the corpse, guys.
Why would you leave a powerful thing like that just on a corpse?
I don't know.
What? You guys going to pry it off his dead body, you ghouls?
Well, Captain Atlas
he ain't
going
to be needing this anymore.
I mean, the Greeks don't have a problem.
Yeah, they're bad guys,
people. Other people aren't.
Oh, just because the bad guys, that's our standard of behavior. What the Kree do now.
Those wrists and hands shrivel up real nice once you're a corpse, and they would slip right off.
Well, I hope you have some kind of force field or something around the tomb, at least.
All I say is I'm not letting any of you near my dead body.
I hope you're not wearing Negabands.
Do you have any gold teeth, Andrew?
Exactly. Well, the Kree would have taken them, so, you know.
Quasar corners Atlas, so he taps the Negabands together and disappears, leaving Rick Jones in his place. That's the old switcheroo thing that Mar-Vell and Rick Jones had. You tap the Negabands and they would switch place.
You know, Wonder Man always reminded me of the kind of shaky, weird book, and this doesn't exactly change my perception of that book.
Also fun to see the old Kree designs, like Minerva's design is the old Ms. Marvel costume, you know, and Atlas's old green and white Kree uniform. Those are fun duds to see.
And I like the subplot where the Kree are putting their own supergroup together as this bakes along.
Well, they need
which
one.
Is kind of fun.
In who was guarding Rick? That leads us right over to Wonder Man issue number 7 for part 4. It is written by Gerard Jones with art by Jeff Johnson and Dan Panosian. And Captain Atlas has switched places with Rick, and he's got no clue what happened. This is as much as a surprise to him as it is to anybody else. So he's just jumped right into a fight with Wonder Man, Wonder Man was just sitting there with Rick just a minute ago, and now, boom.
You know, say what you will about Simon, no one's ever going to accuse him of being, like, the 12th smartest guy in the universe. I mean, I like him a lot, don't get me wrong, but, yeah, he is not the sharpest.
He gets duped, but he eventually figures it out.
He does good here. I mean, Atlas figures out the switching mechanism and uses it to his advantage, like fighting Wonder Man for a while, switching to Rick when Wonder Man's trying to land a punch, and then switching back to himself and throwing his own punches. But Simon figures out the timing and knocks out Atlas with like a double page spread punch. Boom. Rick is recovered and will be returned to the Hulk and the Panthenon, finally. And just then, a distress call from the Star Corps space station. There's a lethal solar flare headed their way.
Uh-oh.
Star Corps, from the old, another X-Men angle.
It's so weird, though. Like, I was like, I don't know if they should be exploring Mars. And I'm like, oh, look, they have a space station way out in outer space. Okay. I guess this goes further back.
Well, we all thought things were going to go a little better with the space thing once we got to the moon so quickly and everything. Well, nobody knew that we were all going to ditch that whole space business.
Star Corps was a Claremont thing of a space station that was monitoring the sun. And they used that several times with X-Men stories. Pretty sure
X-Men can bring them there.
Part 5, it takes place in Avengers 345, written by Bob Harris, with art by Steve Epting, and inks and colors by Tom Palmer.
Todd Epting.
Next time you get to Baltimore, Steve, give a tip of the hat to Tom Palmer, too. I thought this is right at the end of my regularly reading Avengers, but I enjoyed this team. I mean, the Thor version I'm less on, but I always thought Cersei was a good Avenger.
Me too.
Underrated.
Yeah.
And the flak jacket works good with her. a contingent of Avengers. Vision, Thor, and Cersei of the Eternals. And Quasar go cosmic and rescue the jettisoned crew of this destroyed Star Corps station. They witness a warp hole open and like an armada of Shi'ar ships emerge. They get fired on, and they have to fight back and drive the Shi'ar back.
Yeah, and if you're going, you could probably if you were wanting to do this on the cheap, I would say this is the issue you could probably start with, because this is where everything gets laid out and motivations and reasoning and all that. If you're like, man, I only want to read 6 of these issues or whatever, I would say this is the first one to start with.
It also has the foreshadowing where Cersei threatens to kill the invaders, and Captain America freaks out when he hears this, which kind of foreshadows the later moral dilemma.
I remember those great World War II tales where Cap always made sure to just use his shield to knock out the Nazis.
Hey, he's been there. Right. He has experience and knows better now. Back on Earth, the Avengers determine that the Shi'ar and the Kree are at war, and their use of warping in and out of stargates near our solar system is damaging our sun and endangering our planet. So,
well, at least that worked out.
Cap calls a big gathering, and they split into three teams.
I thought that was a clever story point, though, of why would we care about these?
Yeah.
It's nice to not put the Earth as the focus. I mean, it is just because the proximity to our star, but it's nice in one of these big cosmic events. It's not that there's something magical about the Earth or the people on or whatever. It's just we happen to have this convenient Stargate next to us.
Yeah, we're
and that's what drags us in.
We're just collateral damage, basically. And the first group of Avengers, Team 1, is Captain America, U.S. Agent, Iron Man, Crystal, Hercules, the Black Knight, and Circe, who are all going to travel to the Kree Empire. And they, we follow their adventures in parts 6, 8, 12, 13, and 15.
Well, then, except there's an important swap you're going to get to.
Then Team 2 is Thor, Wonder Man, The Vision, The Scarlet Witch, the Monica Rambeau Captain Marvel, Star Fox, and the Living Lightning. And they're going to be an envoy to the Shi'ar Imperium, which we follow in parts 7, 11, 14, and 16.
It's funny that the Living Lightning is here because they've done some modern cosmic stuff, and like Living Lightning's there again.
Yeah, the Roy and Dan Thomas did their best to try to make him into a character with some layers and some importance in the West Coast Avengers for a while. And then Team 3, who we end up following in parts 9 and 10, give us She-Hulk, Falcon, Mockingbird, the Secret Wars, Julia Carpenter, Spider-Woman, Hank Pym, the Wasp, Gilgamesh, and Hawkeye to stay Earthside to protect the home front.
What? Hawkeye on Earth?
He's so pissed, right? So Hank hooks him up. A Kree Skrull War era Goliath lives again, goofy costume and all.
I wonder if he just had that laying around somewhere. He's like, I can't get rid of that Goliath outfit. Someday they're going to need me back again. What I really wish for Goliath, though, is that they made him a giant bow and arrow.
Yeah, right.
Well, but I feel like Gilgamesh, man. Talk about an underused guy in this event.
Well, he is the forgotten one. That's the whole point.
Oh, he's forgotten, all right.
And, I mean, this was a good choice for Hawkeye, too, because on the Earth team is only going to appear in two chapters, and the other ones are in multiple chapters, so he did good here. Now it's the U.S. agent who's pissed.
And this is just prime Cap, by the way. He's got the wings, he has the nice boots, the suggestion of chainmail. I always love that, where it's not completely feathered, but just the hint of it around. Ah, just brilliant. Brilliance. Might be nostalgia only, but I always love that depiction.
Would that realistically, functionally work, though, in the real world with real physics and real scene? You know, come on. Just give him the Buccaneer boots and go get on with it.
Exactly.
That guy's a lot of fun at parties.
Right. Now we follow Team 1's mission to the Kree Empire in Part 6, which is Iron Man 278, written by Len Kaminsky with art by Paul Ryan and Bob Wycheck.
Oh, and I did enjoy, there's like a bonus member, and that was her shows up in this, which is kind of a fun. I don't know if you guys got as much of a kick out of it, or she, or her.
I was going to say she was a supporting cast member in the Quasar book for quite some time. So
I got a bigger kick out of the Death Bird. I always think of Jim Lee.
In Iron Man 278, the gang pass through the warp Stargate and find just a ginormous Kree vessel. So they infiltrate it. The Supreme Intelligence of the Kree, who is a big disembodied floating head, Kevin.
Yes.
With tentacles.
Awesome.
He demands that a Kree super agent be put online, even if it's early, at great cost to his own longevity. And this a super agent is called Shatterax.
All I can think of, Steve, is that he reminds me of the head cockroach from Fat Freddy's Cat. Whenever there's casualties, he's always like, well, we got more of them wherever they came from.
But I guess in a different war, the Supreme Intelligence stopped being the ruler?
Yes. He was demoted quite some time ago. Was it at the end of the Kree Skrull War way back when?
I don't recall. Between? Well, there was another war, so I was trying to figure out how I don't recall, so.
And the other thing that's key to note is that the Kree are concerned that they're at a quote-unquote evolutionary dead end.
Oh, that's right, after a millennia.
They're stagnating and worried about their future.
So the Supreme Intelligence is deposed. He's not the leader of the Kree at this time. They have a form of government chosen by the people, all that sort of business. But that's not what the Kree and the Supreme Intelligence wants, of course.
This is also not my favorite era of Iron Man. Like, I don't... This kind of boxy suit, but without all the gee-gaw... Like, if you're going to go boxy, then I want all the gee-gaws and that stuff screwed onto it. Just my own personal 2 cents. If you go streamline, then I like less boxy.
Well, I'm sure the roller skates are still in there.
This was his spacesuit, granted. Iron Man meets Shatterax out in space, and really, I mean, he gets bested by him. So the Avengers surrender and are captured and led away in shackles.
Kevin, did you enjoy the Iron Man interface panels? Did it make you feel like you're at work?
Well, I like the enter password, and I'm like, wait, what? You're not following modern password technology.
Part 7 appears in Thor 445, written by Tom DeFalco, with art by Pat Oliff and Al Milgram. This gives us the story of Team Number 2's journey into Shi'ar space.
And as you indicated, Steve, there is increasing tension between Cap and Iron Man. And I think Iron Man's being kind of jerky. Like, he's making unilateral decisions and that sort of thing.
You know why he's acting jerky, though?
Do you ever...
No.
I mean, do we ever side with Iron Man? Do we ever choose Iron Man when you got to choose between the two?
I was okay with the Armor Wars. Like, I was like, I get it. Okay. Like, it's your crap, and someone took it and did bad things with it. And I liked, Demon in a Bottle, you're kind of siding with them. Because who doesn't want a fun weekend?
Thor's problem here is this is the Eric Masterson in control Thor. There's no Shakespearean lingo, Norse lingo happening here, you know. This is Eric Masterson when he turns into Thor. He's driving the bus. So he's got a lot of insecurities, and he's a little hot-headed and all that sort of business. He's a newbie. He's amateur.
Ugh, I do not like... I feel like he's kind of jerky. Like, unnecessarily so. And it feels like he's almost really immature. Like, I have to remind myself that he's an adult, because it feels like if you gave, like, a 15-year-old...
Yes.
Thor power.
There's a Billy Batson Shazam thing happening here, no question about it. They pass through the Stargate into Shi'ar space and encounter a Kree vessel that has attacked a settlement there, one of the Shi'ar outposts. And this gets the attention of the Imperial Guardsman Supreme, Gladiator, who is one of the Marvel Superman derivative allegory types.
How dare you, Steve? How dare you? An alien with invulnerability, flight, laser eyes, freeze breath. None of those things have any connection to the distinguished competition.
Thor, maybe rightfully so, has reservations about taking him on, but Wonder Man goes off to face him, and he gets beaten, but good. So Thor has to rise to the occasion and fight Gladiator. I mean, he had to, right? It was on the cover. And they fight for like 9 pages, guys.
Nice spread where he knocks him out, though. Could have done without the word balloons for once, but a beautiful image of him.
Yeah, that's why I said some of this stuff isn't super compressed.
Thor ends up besting Gladiator with a lightning bolt and a few good whacks with Mjolnir. And he concludes that he might just have to kill him in order to stop him, but the rest of the team stops him. Again, this foreshadowing between do we kill or do we not kill as Avengers.
Well, also, I wouldn't let that moron be the one to decide. Like, he really doesn't seem rational in any way. But I thought it was interesting. They have weird parts that I don't know if I understand exactly. Like, what they thought when they went down to examine, it was actually Skrulls posing as Kree, but yet the Kree guardian was fooled. And then in the last issue, when they land on the Kree, they're fighting Shi'ar forces, and that's never really explained. There are a few points. I mean, I love this event, and I like that it's bam, bam, and lots of crazy swings, and it feels like the handoff between issues is good. But there are a few things where I'm like,
when we get to that
part, I don't
know
that these really bake in that well.
When we get to that part, bring it up, because I'm not sure I caught that one you're talking about the planet side thing. But Monica Rambeau and the Living Lightning do seem to spy a Skrull, so that is an important element here. At the end of this Thor issue, a Shi'ar armada arrives on scene, and they have our heroes completely surrounded. That leads us to Captain America 399, again by Gruenwald, Levins, and Bulinati. Back in Kree space with Team Number One in their shackles, they arrive on Hala, the Kree homeworld. Hala. When faced with processing by the accusers, Cap didn't know that there was more than one. Did we know there was more than one? I don't know, but there's a whole lot of accusers here.
We probably could have speculated.
Cersei,
I don't like your accusation, Kevin.
It's like Iron Fist. Did you know there was more than one Iron Fist?
Cersei camouflages all of the shackled Avengers to make them look like accusers themselves, and they can then escape in the confusion. They've got to get to, like, some heads of state or something so that they can get them to stop using that Stargate, you know, that's hurting the sun.
That Gambit seemed way too Three Stooges-y to me. Like, it was hard to believe that the accusers would fall for that, but I thought it was a fun, like, whoa, like an old-timey fake-out, like in the old cartoons when they would put on the clothes of the bad guy and miraculously blend in.
And, I mean, this really ticked off Iron Man, that Cersei changed his armor and changed it back. He gets all prickly about that. And then Cap and Iron Man further disagree on how to proceed from here, and Iron Man goes off on his own, but with a mini Goliath on board for reconnaissance, and pretty quickly finds what likely is the Capitol building.
Yeah, boy, Iron Man, he's almost at Civil War level jerkiness at this point.
I know why.
Why? You keep saying
it's not in this story.
Oh, okay. Cap and company follow by hijacking a billboard-like airship that is currently posting, like, wanted signs with them on it.
And I do like that we're in the laser sword era of the Black Knight,
too. Oh, I love that.
Which is always crazy, you know, because you think so much of the Black Knight is determined by his sword.
And as you mentioned,
the ebony blade.
As you mentioned before, Andrew, the Kree Supreme Intelligence is putting together his own super team to match the Shi'ar Imperial Guard and the Terran Avengers. So it's like him, basically, in the surprisingly fit-looking body of the Supremor.
What is with that?
He kept the same ugly head, though, at least.
It's, he looks like He-Man.
It's Shatterax, who took down Iron Man and captured the Avengers. It's the cybernetically enhanced Korath the Pursuer, who sounds like a Celestial. And it's some guy from way back in a Thor issue, like in the late 100s, before issue 200, called the Demon Druid, now being called Ultimus.
He reminded me of those old Guardians of the Galaxies we saw in Thunderbolts.
Korath, being a pursuer and all, finds Cap and company pretty quickly aboard their hijacked vessel and quickly takes out Circe and Crystal, since they're the most powerful. But Cap uses his athletic prowess to take the fight outside the ship to Korath. I mean, it's his book, after all, right? Cap defeats Korath by defeating him, because he was wearing boot jets. And now they are off to rendezvous with Iron Man at the Capitol building. But first, in part 9, we need to check in on Team 3 back on Earth in Avengers West Coast 81, written by the Thomases, with art by Dave Ross and Tim Zahn.
Oh, more U.S. jerk.
Nightshade and Scintilla of the Shi'ar Imperial Guard rescue the Avengers captured Shi'ar, including that War Star, and they accidentally spring Dr. Minerva and Captain Atlas too while the Avengers are fighting the Shi'ar.
Like, how is Nightshade not Shadow Lass? I mean, not to go back to that, but I mean, it's, am I crazy? Like, are we not right on board with that one?
Next
it's
episode, Andrew. Next episode, maybe I'll tell you about the Squadron Supreme. The Avengers capture the Shi'ar back, and the ones who came to rescue them. But Minerva and Atlas escape. But it ain't Minerva.
But we get the... We do get our little bit of Gilgamesh action in this episode. I'm going to be your Gilgamesh spotter for this
event. Don't forget about that.
Minerva isn't Minerva, though, guys. It's the Imperial Guardsman, the Changeling.
Yeah, and he doesn't look like any of those people from the Legion. Come on, with the antennas? I'm just saying, at least the Squadron Supreme, they changed the colors up in their appearance a little.
Well, Atlas thought he was escaping with Minerva, but it was with this Imperial Guardsman, so the Shi'ar have Atlas, and they take his negabands, take them right off his hands. Guys, why didn't the Avengers do that when they first captured him?
Well, maybe they were worried it would do something to Rick Jones.
And another funny thing with that rivalry between the East Coast and West Coast, here they call each other names, actually. They reveal they have, like, derogatory slang names for each other. The Easterers and the Wackos, they call the West Coasters.
The Wackos. Well, it's not like U.S. agents really helping your team.
This is true.
From a perspective. Oh.
The Shi'ar with Atlas escape in a starship, and Quasar is sent after them with her, the female Adam Warlock. And the Shi'ar escape through the Stargate, but leave Imperial Guardsmen Starbolt and Neutron to kick their butt. Mr. Neutron, the deadliest man alive!
The commonplace routine of a typical Monday morning would never be the same again. For into this quiet little community came Mr. Neutron. Mr. Neutron, the most dangerous and terrifying man in the world. The man with the strength of an army. The wisdom of all the scholars in history. The man who had the power to destroy the world. Mr. Neutron. No one knows what strange and distant planet he came from or where he was going to.
And I have to say, as we jump to part 10, I thought Rurik Tyler and Frederick Fredericks do a great fill-in that feel very much like the previous art, the Capullo. Like, I thought they picked sometimes they'll pick contrasting styles, which works, but I thought they picked a team that did a good job of keeping the feel very much like before. And it's, but I don't know how you guys felt.
Definitely. And it's a nice baton handoff between issues too, because now you've got these two Imperial Guardsmen about to fight Quasar and her, and now we jump to part 10 in Quasar 33, or issue 2, if you were buying it off the newsstand. And
yeah, it's just great, like, because the, you know, his cape has the star effect, but he's fighting a guy with the star effect. Like, what a cool decision to piece those two against each other. I completely approve.
Stars.
For great visual, like, cool visuals.
The cover where it's rendered by Capullo and Candelario looks that much better, though, than even the interior stuff. But I'm with you. Yeah. Tyler does an all right job. The fight between Quasar and her against Starbolt and Neutron plays out here. Starbolt is easily contained in a light construct bubble, and Neutron gets flown like a light year away and just left there to fend for himself.
Those space guys. And her, I think, should be pretty powerful, too.
Yep.
I mean, assuming she has the equivalent power of... is it the same as Adam Warlock for power, or is it different?
It evolves, but it's kind of like Adam Warlock's was when he first came out of the Hive.
Okay. Does she have her Magus version, too, that she's trying to prevent from happening?
No, thank goodness.
Oh, you just left a story there for someone.
Quasar, I wish they would do anything where they call her Kismet now, or that's what they did for a while, at least at the end of the Quasar series. Quasar chases the Shi'ar ship into their space through the Stargate and catches up with them and faces a group of the Imperial Guard. I mean, these Imperial Guardsmen are everywhere. What's weird, though, is he faces a group of the Imperial Guard that oddly includes a few that were captured on Earth and didn't make it in the getaway, like Warstar.
Don't they have families of these guys?
Hey, they sacrifice.
Yeah, there's a lot of these. Yeah.
That's what it means.
That's a pretty good try at a no prize there, Kev, because we know that there's been, you know, more smashers down the line, right?
Because when you sign up for the Legion of Superheroes, you do.
I don't know if they have another war star right away like that in the field.
Well, yeah, that's pretty unique.
I think it's just a mistake myself. But Quasar learns that the Shi'ar are collecting old Kree weapons from throughout Marvel history, like the Negabands, the Omni-Wave projectors, and such like that. So Quasar escapes them with Atlas and tracks the energy signature of the Negabands to the equivalent of a big Shi'ar, like, starship building yard out in outer space. They're building something big. He then gets attacked by Binary of the Starjammers, who is Carol Danvers, Ms.
And
Marvel.
He doesn't know her either, too. Another great Marvel. People don't know each other. Although, speaking of leaving stories on the table, I will leave this. I think the Kree Atlas should fight the Thunderbolt Atlas in a battle for the name, mimicking the fight for Power Man name.
What about the fight for the Photon Captain Marvel name?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't fight for that one. That's why I think it should be like a bruiser. He should show up just like Luke Cage did and say, there's only one Atlas, and then just beat the stuffing out of him and say, you're calling yourself something else now.
Just as Quasar's being attacked by Binary, another group warps in and attacks them both. Onslaught? No, not that one. Moon Dancer?
Green Lantern.
Moon Dancer, Voyager, the energy eating Glom, and Solar Wind.
Because that dude is definitely 90s Green Lantern.
I was going to say, it's either Spectre or Green Lantern.
This time, it's Quasar that gets warped out to the far reaches of space and left there by his foe. Meanwhile, we learn that Lalandra's scientists, Lalandra is the Empress of the Shi'ar, they have successfully weaponized the Negabands. They busted them open and harnessed their raw negative zone energy. With Quasar gone, Captain Atlas gets captured by this apparently B-team of Imperial Guardsmen. But in the last panel, he gets sprung from his cell by a figure who looks a lot like Shatterax. Part 11 is in Wonder Man number 8, written by Gerard Jones, with art by Jeff Johnson and Stephen Jones, and inks by Jan Harps and Art Nichols. Here we're back to Avengers Team 2, the Shi'ar Envoy. But the flow is pretty smooth because it opens with the team in Lilandra's presence as she shows off their city-sized Nega Portal, as they call it, which is to be ferried between the stargates through our solar system and deposited in Kree space. The Star Jammers are commissioned to transport the Nega Portal device, but Corsair, their leader, him being from Earth, he's Cyclops' dad, he refuses to do the task. He's not going to tow this thing through the home space of his, you know, home planet, basically. But the rest of the team will do it without him.
Gotta like how they stick together, those Star Jammers. Mm-hmm. One for all and all for one, but hey, you know, we got bills to pay.
Wonder Man, a weapons manufacturer in his pre-Hollywood, pre-dead days, recognizes an Enola Gay scenario when he sees it. So he grabs the Vision, his bro, and they fly off after it and board the Nega Portal. It's like the Shi'ar are shooting after them and stuff like that. Hey, come back here. The Star Jammers who are towing the thing investigate and fight Wonder Man and the Vision. But Wonder Man and the Vision explain that this isn't a portal, guys. It's a Nega bomb.
Mm.
And the Star Jammers, they agree not to deliver the payload and jettison the bomb. It's just before they pass through the Stargate of Shi'ar space, so the lead ship passes through the Stargate, but the bomb is just left floating in space with our two heroes stranded on it.
And I like how every time we have Wonder Man, he has to mention that he can't fly. In every single fight, he always slips it in. Dang it, why can't I fly?
But he doesn't he have those rocket pack jets on his back?
He picked up the Vision and he flew up to the catch up to the Nega Bomb when it was being towed away.
He's got those powerful jumps. he's got hops.
Part 12 is in Avengers 346 by Harris, Epting, and Palmer. All right, we're back to Avengers Team 1 on the Kree homeworld. Holla.
Looking great, as always.
Yeah.
They sight the Kree capital citadel across the city, and they head for it so they can rendezvous with Iron Man and Goliath. We also get more evidence that the disembodied floating head Supreme Intelligence is methodically manipulating events around him here as per some grand plan of his. He assembles this team of super beings that are loyal to him and calls them the Star Force. That's
good. You can see him with his steeple fingers, right?
That's Minerva and Atlas and Shatterax and Korath the Pursuer, Ultimus and the Supremor. The Supreme Intelligence tells them that the Avengers intend on assassinating the two Kree rulers. So the Star Force heads off and engages and fights our heroes for several pages.
Lots of fun comic book.
It is.
Excitement. I like this.
That's when I don't mind things being decompressed, when it's a battle scene. Right? Speed up the in-between scenes and decompress the battles. This battle gets interrupted by the two warrior rulers of the Kree Empire showing up on site. But the two teams that are fighting, the Star Force and the Avengers, get teleported by the Supreme Intelligence back to his lair, just as Deathbird, Lilandra's murderous sister, lives up to her name and assassinates the Kree rulers, leaving the Supreme Intelligence as the once and future ruler of the Kree.
Aw, yeah.
Let me tell you, those guys don't put up that much of a fight either, I want to say. For warrior ruler types, they go down quick.
It's Deathbird.
The Supreme Intelligence also frames the Avengers as accomplices to the deed, and they will be executed on the morrow.
Nice. And that's the end of the first trade. Can you believe it?
Ooh, that's a good place for the first trade to end. Part 13 is in Iron Man 279 by Kaminsky, Paul Ryan, and Bob Wycheck, with Keith Williams helping on the inks. Iron Man and Goliath were separated from Cap and the group on Hala, remember? And they learn of the fate of the others, being framed as accomplices and to be executed. So they split up. Goliath will find Deathbird, and Iron Man will rescue Cap and company. Unfortunately, Iron Man's armor power, including life support, which at this time he was reliant on a neural web that was underneath his armor to keep his body alive. And this power, it's pretty rapidly dwindling, so he's got to hurry up.
Yeah, he has to plug it in, right, Steve, to an outlet somewhere.
Was this after he got shot, or he had the nervous system collapse?
That's what I was thinking, because it wasn't that neural suit, wasn't that after the nervous system collapse after he was shot?
I'm not sure. He's had so many illnesses and problems.
Hey, it's not easy being rich. And by the way, I would definitely pick Iron Man to come rescue me over Goliath / Hawkeye.
Hey, at least you know Hawkeye's gonna come for you. Iron Man's like, no, let's leave him.
He might not, but I don't think he's particularly adept at the power level stuff. Like, he is street level all day.
In the prison block, Captain America is taken from the others by the accusers, who are now back under the control of the Supreme Intelligence. And the Supreme Intelligence, by the way, he absorbs the essences of the fallen rulers in this bizarre and quite spiteful ritual, as he kind of like tells them what for while he's absorbing them.
I always thought that was a cool idea, though, that they take all the collective wisdom and don't, because you think he'd get, like, he'd be a tougher opponent each time. He's a little bit smarter, has a little bit more knowledge.
Clint,
and you would think for some alien culture, they'd be like, of course this is going to be this should be the guy, because he has all the rulers ever in him. And he should be the best.
Hawkeye as Goliath finds Deathbird, and it's not just a convenience to the story. I mean, Iron Man gave him a little tracking device to help make it convenient. And he finds her in the sewers and almost squishes her in a confined sewer space and somehow convinces her to team up with him to help rescue the others, and they do. Iron Man faces Ronan the Accuser and, again, is totally outmatched, especially with his power levels falling here, guys. I mean, he's decided he's going to have to pull a kamikaze move and blow himself up and try to take as many accusers out with him. Just then, the guy who you think is ineffective, Goliath, shows up and brings the walls down just like he did during the original Kree-Skrull War and saves the day with the rest of the team. They all take out Ronan when the walls come down and save the day. Goliath tells them that Deathbird told him about the Negabomb. Awfully helpful, this Deathbird. Although she manages to escape while they weren't looking. And so they decide what they'll need to do with this Negabomb coming in is they're going to rush off to meet the Negabomb as it passes through the Stargate into Kree space. And even though that's going to abandon Cap on Hala.
Well, you know, Cap's resourceful. I think they could have had a fun, reminds me, you know, like Wolverine trapped in the Hellfire Club or something. You know, you don't want to mess with Cap. He's been behind enemy lines in World War II.
Then in the last sequence, we see the Negabomb floating in space, and some Skrulls coming upon it. Hey, what's this?
This doesn't bode well.
Part 14 of Operation Galactic Storm appears in Thor 446, written by DeFalco with art by Olaf and Milgram.
So did you know they used the cover for 446 for the cover of the second trade, but they recolored it?
Mm.
And I, like, totally like the original cover with the flat colors better, because they added shadows and, like, all this stuff. And, like, some of the details are, like, really weird with the modern coloring.
2006 was not a good year for the recolorings. It's like when Dark Horse started to do the Conan reprints with the recolorings, and, like, everyone was doing it a little heavy-handed, you know? In Thor 446, the Shi'ar Envoy, Team 2, as I was calling them, isn't really having much luck negotiating with the Shi'ar Empress Lilandra and her trusted advisor. And it's pretty much because the Eric Masterson Thor is a hothead and an amateur, like I said before.
And not just a hot, but, like, the maturity of, like, a 16-year-old. Like, U.S. agent's a jerk, but he seems at least like an adult. This Thor really does seem like, or maybe it's DeFalco getting ready for the MCU 2 that he did such a great job with.
As the Avengers are being led away to their chambers, escorted by members of the Imperial Guard, the Kree Star Force, minus Atlas and Minerva, but plus Ronan, show up. I mean, they just teleport in. Their mission...
They're a commando team.
Yeah, and they're on a commando mission to kill Lilandra in retaliation for their leader's assassination at the hands of Deathbird. Meanwhile, it almost looks like Lilandra's advisor is about to pull a knife on her. But they get interrupted, so it's kind of hard to be sure.
Well, also, what's key is she's talking about, well, maybe, you know, we need to back off the war. So you get the strong feeling that the advisor wants this war to go forward.
And at that moment, far, far away, aboard the aimlessly floating Negabomb, the Vision and Wonder Man feel the hull suddenly shake. And it's a funny panel, I think, because it's making fun of itself and comics, especially how comics were in the 70s and 80s, where everything that you see is also being described, right? You see, obviously, the hull is shaking and our heroes are all jarred and off balance and everything. And the Vision states that they're being shaken. and Wonder Man replies that, like, I hardly noticed, you know? After all, why bother to describe out loud what we can already see in an instant when you're looking at a visual media, you know? But, so the Vision phases topside to investigate. The Negabomb is being towed. But by who? Skrulls. Stinking
Skrulls. Don't trust
Skrulls.
Those guys.
Yeah, stinking Skrulls. Always the Skrulls. Back at the Shi'ar Palace, the Avengers join the Imperial Guardsmen in fighting off the Star Force. And some nice combinations are shown here, too, like the Living Lightning travels along Husser's Neuro Whip to zap Supremer.
Yeah, I like that. I kind of like Shatterax. He's sort of robotic, but I love that he fights MP the Impossible Man.
And there's also a cool moment where the Living Lightning is neutralized. His lightning powers are diminished, but Thor reignites him using Mjolnir and the power of the lightning. Then he's like super Living Lightning.
Yeah, and then later he's like, that wasn't cool. That wasn't cool, bro. Like, you need to be more careful. But my favorite has to be when poor Star Fox never, even though it's, they always make it seem like he's not able to hold his own, but he's an Eternal. Like, he has plenty of power. But I always like how they make him seem like he's just, oh, he can just make you happy. Like, that's all he can do.
He has the creepiest power ever.
Yeah, I love that She-Hulk as the lawyer storyline where Star Fox was being like, it was like a Me Too thing where a lot of his quote unquote victims were coming back and his past girlfriends and people and all, including She-Hulk as his lawyer, has to wonder if she was manipulated to being, concerned about him enough to take the case and everything. Cause it's, how do you know when you're around somebody like that? It's a Purple Man thing, you know?
It's a Spider-Woman thing, all those pheromones going around.
Right? Oh, they would be a good couple.
I like the phrase, totally blissed out, when he zaps him.
And speaking of Thor reigniting the Living Lightning with Mjolnir, I mean, this is Thor's book and everything. Thor mans up and holds his own against Ronan the Accuser, finishing him off with help from Smasher. This is all a distraction, though, because Ultimus sneaks off and seeks out Lilandra for the kill. But that's when Star Fox is there to protect her, and he's just enough until she can protect herself. This whole series of events, like, Lilandra has seen the light. The Nega Bomb, it must be recalled. Peace talks must be their focus on their policy with the Kree from here on out. But the Skrulls are towing that Nega Bomb through the Stargate, and they aim to keep this war going and take out their old enemies, the Kree, in the process.
Oh, boy.
And who says violence doesn't solve problems? All that violence helped convince her to change her mind. So, you know, there's a plus side to it all. People, kids, don't worry. Sometimes, you know, might does help people make right.
All right, one more rotation through the titles here as this wraps up the fourth quarter of this four-month event. Part 15 is in Captain America 400, written by Gruenwald with art by Levins and Bullinati. Right?
Now, isn't it weird to put, like, such a big anniversary issue as, like, part whatever of a... I mean, like I said, I enjoy this event. It's cool. I'm down with it. It just felt weird that they were going to use this as...
This whole thing ends up being a Cap morals Cap as Cap's version of what is a hero kind of a story. It ends up being a Cap story, and especially with the fallout afterwards. So I kind of understand. It might just be an unfortunate timing of the issue numbering, but I'll have you know that this was just the lead story in Cap 400, and there was a bunch of other stories and back matter and all that sort of stuff that made it be a worthy anniversary issue.
Well, that's why I thought it was okay, because that's not the only story you're getting, so even if something doesn't live up to it, like, there's more there.
I guess, but, you know, as we barrel towards Marvel Noise episode 400, you know, I'm looking out for us, guys.
Well, it's not just going to be a flashback or recap clip show?
Hey, our episode 300 was good. That was a lot of work.
It was.
So Cap, he got led away from the imprisoned Avengers on Hala, remember? By the Accusers, and then he was left to fend for himself when Iron Man and company flew the coop to rendezvous with the Nega Bomb near the Kree Stargate. So Cap, he got led by the Accusers to the presence of the Supreme Intelligence, who wants to absorb him, but it has to be done post-mortem, so he runs a mental simulation in Cap's head where Cap fights some of his greatest foes. You know, this is an anniversary issue, so that's anniversary issue-ish to have him fight Cobra and Batroc and Flag Smasher and Viper and Crossbones and, of course, the Skull.
We're really
business
putting...
suit Red Skull. Middle management Red Skull.
Yep.
We're really putting Flag Smasher over Zemo.
Yeah, I mean, that was the part. Zemo shows up for the first time in, like, 275, 276. Barely any appearances.
And Flag Smasher is such a key classic.
At that time, he was a big deal.
Cap and the Zemos have legacy. The old Zemo, I would have even been fine with old Zemo. Dude killed Bucky, remember?
Old Zemo.
I know how you guys don't care about Bucky, but I do.
They put Flag Smasher and Viper and Crossbones in there just to put some, like, current.
Yeah.
Type villains.
Recency bias there.
Well, I could see Crossbones because of the Red Skull and his... He's such a formidable opponent and linked to the Red Skull. Cobra, another one that I felt like. Real Batroc, of course. Viper,
Cobra,
yes. Red Skull, you have to have Red Skull, I mean.
Viper was leading Hydra, so she represented Hydra.
Yeah.
Cobra was just one of the Serpent Society, and the Serpent Society have always been Cap folks.
I'm fine with that. And Batroc, I love.
And Batroc was cool because he especially how he reasons with Batroc, right? Yeah. Like, Batroc's the one that he could talk to and be like, hey, you know, take off your mask. How come you got no face? That's because I have no knowledge of what your face looks like, so this must be a simulation run from my memories. And Cap will not yield to the simulation, so the Supreme Intelligence just tosses him aside, quite literally.
I just feel like, I said, Flag Smasher would have swapped him out for the original Zemo.
Flag Smasher was important by then. I think that's who John Walker beat on to be like the weird, to show that like Cap was gone too far and wigged out and everything. Wasn't he?
Gone too far and wigged out. He might have been, though. I do remember those, like, there are no nations and the big anarchy type thing, but he just felt somewhat Johnny come, like, you have Crossbones for your Johnny new on the scene. Like, let's get some, let's not forget this guy fought all them fights in World War II. I would have taken the Hitler too, would have been a good one to have.
Or MODOK.
why isn't MODOK there?
Yeah, or MODAM.
Wow.
Classic Cap villains that get ignored.
You're not going to have Baron Blood? Or Zola? Oh, yeah. With Zola.
Oh, Zola would have been a good one. Or like Master Man. Like just someone showing that this guy fought in the big WW2.
Part 16 of Operation Galactic Storm appears in Avengers West Coast 82, written by the Thomases with art by Ross and Zahn.
So do you like these big splash pages when you open up some of these issues and they're like, the Kree Star Force must die? Very dramatic.
I like the Ross Design art, that's for sure. This, I think, is the most jarring shift in the characterization and the story flow between the writers of all these different titles, because Lalandra is now portrayed as ready to execute the captured Kree Star Force and show some animosity towards the Avengers by sicking the Imperial Guard on them. I mean, they fight for 9 pages here, guys.
We just fought with you. Now we're now we're like, wait, what?
And it's like,
I think that's cool. I like a big fight scene.
They fight until the Living Lightning gets fed up with Alandra's advisor, who's barking all these hostilities, and zaps him. Doesn't zap him enough to kill him, but it's enough to shake his concentration, and he turns into a Skrull.
Oh, is that why he had the knife?
So it looks like the Shi'ar Kree conflict has been further stirred up by these stinking Skrulls.
Can't just Skrull.
Because if he could kill her without anyone, he can just swap places.
Lalandra has seen the light now again, and she releases Ultimus to return to Hala, to report of the news of the Skrull involvement and to call back the Negabomb and all that. Part 17 is in Quasar 34, or 3, by Gruenwald, Rurik Tyler, and Keith Williams. As the hijacked Negabomb passes between stargates near our solar system, Her tries to halt its transport but gets distracted by an assault from the Super Skrull.
Yeah, the Super Skrull. Everyone likes the Super Skrull.
Quasar finally is back from deep space and imprisons the Super Skrull. He reaches the Skrull vessel that's towing the Negabomb towards the Kree Stargate. And the Skrulls are like, we're helping the Shi'ar Empire by delivering this for them. And Quasar's all, well, Lalandra recalled it. And they're pretty
They do the Candygram for Mongo moment.
Yeah, right? And they're like, well, it's out of her hands now. We're delivering it anyway.
What?
They tell Quasar that they better allow them through the second Stargate into Kree space, or they'll detonate it right here in our space.
They're going to turn that ship right around and go home if those kids don't behave.
And what makes matters worse and makes the decision, you know, rushed and imperative is that the very presence of the Negabomb and all of this additional Stargate use for these large objects is making the sun going wild. Like, the sun is about to fall apart. So Quasar kind of has to let them pass so he can focus on the sun.
And I like that they have a built-in deus ex machina, the epoch. Like, if they ever need to, you know, write their way into a corner that they can't. It's like the cosmic cube, you know? Well, if you ever get stuck in a corner, you just call on one of these.
He doesn't do much as give advice on what to do. So he's not quite so bad. He's the unending well of knowledge when Quasar, as you said, who's very inexperienced and seems like a young kind of a hero himself to be doing all of this cosmic stuff. Epoch fills him in. It's like the old Guardian who was, Eon, who was Mar-Vell's a pointer of him being the Cosmic Guardian or whatever. He's gone, and so now Epoch is less experienced too, so it's like a less experienced Guardian and a less experienced Protector kind of working together to do their thing. Fortunately, Carol Danvers, as Binary, shows up and burns herself out helping Quasar save our son. Not only that, but guys, Carol's Binary power was totally depleted in this act. This is the end of Binary, and she'd spend months recuperating in Avengers Mansion, only to return as Warbird back with the Avengers.
And a great, for those of you collecting Avengers Jarvis sandwich cameos, there is one in this one too.
Then Quasar goes off chasing after the Negabomb into Kree space, since he allowed its passage there. In part 18, which is Wonder Man issue number 9, written by Gerard Jones with art by Jeff Johnson and Steven Jones. And
this is the one where Andrew doesn't like the text.
This is where I don't like the cover. The text fighting our characters. Exactly. Nego. Wow, how did they send like 12 cover mock-ups, and this is the one that they're like...
It's Eisner-ish.
Ugh. You can't just take the easy way out, Steve, and call it Eisner-ish. These guys aren't Eisner.
Wonder Man and the white, rebuilt, emotionless, divorced from the Scarlet Witch Vision disagree quite strongly.
Shocking.
About trying to disarm the bomb. Vision's point of view is that this pretty much helps the Earth if the Shi'ar win the war by doing this.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not sure how his circuitry got rid of the whole, like, we only care about humans now and murder millions of Kree's cool. Like, I understand that he's not emotional, but that seems like, I'm not sure what calculator has that coming out as a cool outcome, rational or not. You know, I don't think Spock's going like, yeah, that would work.
Well, a human took away his emotions and go, oh, you know, aliens, we can just kill them, they're fine. So that's why he's just like, yeah, this works out.
Exactly. It seems particularly weird. But I do like, there's lots of cool big panels of everyone showing up. So even though it's Wonder Man's book, like, we're going to get lots of cool cameos of the Avenger teams.
So they're fighting, and the Skrulls that are towing the ship know that they've got the stowaways on board, so they send a team to hunt them down. But, like, they're really fighting Vision and Wonder Man. And Team 2, the Shi'ar envoy, board a craft and head for a rendezvous with the Negabomb. And remember, Team 1 was en route to intercept it from Hala, remember? Hala. So both teams rendezvous at the Negabomb, minus Cap, and fight the Skrulls. It's funny, on the bridge of the Skrull vessel, a subordinate asked the captain if they should detonate the bomb now. Because the captain has all been like, hey, oh, we're ready to die, we're Skrulls and everything. And the captain is like, are you insane? I have a family to think of. Why would I want to detonate the bomb? At that moment, there are lots of surprised faces across two pages because they notice that the bomb is armed and about to boom.
Yeah, and I'm like, what a cliff. How are they going to defuse that? That's going to be hard. I mean, you know, we're right at the end, and I would be pretty miffed if I bought Wonder Man 9 and be like, what, you're ending on that? Dang it. Now I got to go buy some dumb Avengers title. The only title worth in it then is Wonder Man.
Part 19 is the double-sized finale in Avengers 347. This one
like
cost
this cover too.
This one cost $1.75, guys. 50 cents more.
Yeah.
I'll allow it, Steve.
Harris, Epting, and Palmer are the team. Empire's End is the title. The Negabomb has detonated.
I don't think so, Steve. They wouldn't do that.
They wouldn't do that.
The destruction is massive, guys. Quasar is shown getting blown by the blast. Cities on Hala are crumbling to dust. Atlas, Minerva, and Deathbird are shown huddling for their lives. The Kree space fleet, the outlying planets and territories of the Kree Empire, the entirety of the Kree Empire is wiped out in the blast.
They'll be fine.
But it's interesting how the blast only kills Kree.
Right. Miraculously, Quasar survives the blast. Only a quantum force field saved him, you know.
Deathbird survives. Captain America survives.
He scoots around, Quasar does, and finds team number one, minus Cap. They're all floating dead in space. Team number two, quote-unquote, rode the blast wave with minimal damage in their ship. They're surprisingly looking like a Quinjet ship. And Wonder Man and the Vision are also found alive. They, you know, Wonder Man's made of ionic energy in the first place, and the Vision, he phased.
And it's just a phase, Steve. They'll get over it.
In a move that makes me really double think what I think about the Eternals, their childhood, their upbringing, Star Fox recalls a game they used to play in their childhood where Cersei would turn everyone into inert dead matter and give everyone a fright. And so that's what she's done to the Avengers to help them survive the cold reaches of space. And Star Fox is able to reverse the process. So, hey, they're all alive too.
Well, that's some childhood.
And planet side on Hala, Deathbird is alive, like you said, Andrew. And she creepily finds Captain America, determines that he'd be a worthy mate, and starts kissing him.
That would be an awesome... I would totally read a Deathbird and Cap team-up series. They go around and, like, they're constantly... You know, she wants to kill everybody, and he's talking her out of it and everything. Wouldn't that be a great team-up?
You know,
there's a little
funny
romance involved.
In the 90s, I wanted a Bishop and Deathbird series because they were hanging around for a while.
Yeah, I think Cap and Deathbird is a better team up.
Not surprisingly, having a planet crumble around you and a city raised pretty much on your shoulders and being unconscious, you are able to be aroused by some kisses from Deathbird. And Cap is awake now, but ew, they're making out in front of the Supreme Intelligence in his chamber. Yep, he survived the blast too, guys.
Well,
everyone,
you know,
else,
he did.
Everyone else
the
is
Supreme
dead,
Intelligence.
Though. I swear, everyone else is. Well, no, Atlas and Minerva, they somehow survived too, but everyone else is dead.
Well, some small number survived. They're in
like 2%.
Yeah, a small amount of the people
the 2%
survived. And that's where you find out this, too. I did not see this. I thought they'd stop the bomb between you and me when I was reading this. I thought it wouldn't go off. So, well done. They fooled me.
The reunited Avengers head to Hala to search for Cap and assess the damage done to the capital city. Minerva and Atlas find them first, and a skirmish breaks out. But Cap and Deathbird interrupt the hostilities, and they declare what they have learned, that the Supreme Intelligence played everybody as pawns, right, in this grand scheme to jumpstart the evolutionary process of the otherwise stagnant Kree race, which, as you said before, Andrew, hit an evolutionary dead end.
And it just seems hard to believe that this was the solution of, like, well, we got great scientists, but they can't figure it out, so let's radiate murder most 90% of the population and radiate the rest, and that'll somehow work out. But he was right.
Yeah, he'll do anything. He's really into scheming and experimenting.
But I did not. Did you guys see this coming? What was your? Like I said, I was caught flat-footed.
Well, I already knew. I think it was one of those things that you just learned through either reading other comics or finding out about through friends or something. So even before I had read the story, I already knew what the outcome was.
I can't remember how the issues exactly came out, but because it was all the Avengers titles, some of these issues came out like multiple ones on the same week. I can't remember if another issue came out with this one. So, like, you know, you saw the cover and you just had it, you know, in your queue of how you were going to read it or whatever. You know how I am, though. I wait till the ends of storylines before I really dig in. So I had started reading this and was, you know, they came out so many episodes per month, installments, that it was pretty fun to read it serialized. But, you know, occasionally you'd let three or four of them pile up. So it wasn't a surprise to me, but I mean, overall, I was surprised that they were doing that to the Kree. I mean, it's the Kree. That's a Stan and Jack staple of Marvel Cosmic. And surprisingly, Atlas's paramour, Minerva, was even in on the Supreme Intelligence's plan, which ticks him off. Everything he's fought for is a lie, so he decides to set his battle armor on self-destruct and blow himself up. And Minerva dives into him, embracing him right as it goes off, so they meet a tragic end in a pile of dust.
Well, and he also, as he punches his ticket, says, you need to go take out the Supreme, you need to go kill the Supreme Intelligence as justice to avenge these people. Oh. It seemed weird that he wouldn't, if you're going to kill yourself anyways, why not try, like, a suicide attack on the Supreme Intelligence? But,
well, he already said that he can't do it because he's so used to his loyalty to him, right? He's like, you need to do what I can't. I can't do the act.
Oh, he could do it if he won, if he's that upset.
This is all the Supreme Intelligence's fault, though, all of this. The Black Knight, he wants to kill it. But
yeah, I love that. Cap, we're the guy. Let's kill him. And he just turns his sword on. That's a badass moment, too, of the Black Knight. But then again, he comes from a lineage of, look, in King Arthur's days, they didn't use a wooden sword and lock the guy up. Off with his head.
Cap won't have any of that talk, though, guys. But Iron Man, Hercules, Wonder Man, Vision, Circe, and Thor all agree with the Black Knight, and they separate from Cap and company and become the now infamous Avengers Murder Squad.
Yeah, this is a kind of a fan-splitting moment where, like, people are like, X-Men kill, Avengers don't kill. So I remember there's some online fandom about the Murder Squad and Anti-Murder Squad.
Oh, yeah.
Even years later in, like, early pre-modern internet fandom.
You bet.
Well, we know Hercules. If we're to believe the 12 labors of Hercules, we also know Thor, even though this is a different Thor, has killed loads of frost giants and all that stuff. So and Circe, having been around for thousands of years, must have. So the surprise has to be Iron Man, I would say, and Wonder Man are the only ones that aren't traditionally off murdering. And Iron Man's going to hide behind the fact that it's an artificial intelligence, which I always think of like a robot, not like a collection of people's collected consciousness.
Wouldn't Iron Man be defending the artificial intelligence because he knows so much about that kind of stuff? But both Iron Man and Wonder Man were both munitions manufacturers.
Good point. So they've killed millions of people too. So,
but Captain America, Captain Marvel, Quasar, Scarlet Witch, the Living Lightning, Star Fox, and Crystal and Goliath want no part of this. The Murder Squad heads off to destroy the Supreme Intelligence, who defends himself with apparitions of their, like, arch enemies. You get Ultron, the Mandarin, the Sir Percy Black Knight, Grim Reaper, the real Thor. Cerebus, and Crow.
It's funny how even a projection of the other of Odin's son is more real than Eric.
Yep. The murder squad defeats them and then finds the organic brain of the Supreme Intelligence. And even though Thor has second thoughts and changes his mind at the last minute, the Black Knight is staunchly on board with this idea and does the deed. And the Supreme Intelligence is no more.
Yeah, right, Steve.
For now. Unless he planned it.
Unless you see some little thing rocket off into the sky.
The groups reunite, and Iron Man, he doesn't want to hear it from Cap. Quote, he's not in the mood for one of Cap's homilies. Which further demarcates the rift between these two characters. Then Lilandra arrives and claims Hala as part of the Shi'ar Empire. Hala.
Doesn't Deathbird take over as like some weird role yep. where she's in charge of the Kree?
Exactly. She makes Deathbird her viceroy to rule this fallen empire, which she does for a time. Cap is... he's just pissed off at Iron Man and the Kill Squad. And even though he was told not to, he manages to get in a homily before they split to return home. And the event ends on an epilogue page where, as Andrew alluded to, a Skrull is seen following orders to download the consciousness of the Supreme Intelligence so that it will live on, the stinking Skrulls.
Well, they're about to have a bad time with Galactus, unless that's already happened. But I don't think so.
All those throne worlds get eaten up at some point.
Hey, it's their own fault for making it so tasty.
That's the event, but I should also mention that in Captain America 401 has the story title After the Storm.
By in the trade.
Gruenwald, Levins, and Bullinati. And there's a lot of Cap-specific stuff going on because he's been ignoring, you know, the stuff that was going on in his book, being off-world and everything. But this is like an aftermath issue that explores how Cap is dealing with the events of Operation Galactic Storm. He tries to step down from leading the Avengers after no one will support a vote for disciplinary actions against the murder squad. He decides to set up a lecture on superhuman ethics, but only Wanda, Natasha, and Clint show up, so he just bags it. He tries to distract himself by checking in on his usual supporting cast, but everything's in shambles. They're missing, otherwise distracted, etc. So finally, he just ends up going out for a beer with first Clint and then Tony, and they kind of talk it out and shake hands and move on.
Yeah, I thought it was a satisfying epilogue.
Kind of a sad issue.
Yeah. This ends up being a Cap gets disillusioned by how these modern heroes want to handle themselves and want to represent themselves and the name the Avengers. And even Tony's there, and Tony keeps saying, I'm the only founding... You know, he keeps rubbing that in Cap's face. We didn't find you until issue 4. I'm the only founding wow. member of the Avengers on this team.
Why don't you go back in your ice cube, old man? No, he asked for, he asked for forgiveness. Like, I thought that was a nice moment where he's like, oh, come on, forgive me, man. We're cool.
Yeah, easy to forgive, hard to forget, you know. What I think is funny is that the Supreme Intelligence plan to evolve the Kree race, it really doesn't work. There's that maximum security event that happens a few years later, maybe. At first there was like live Kree or die.
Yeah.
Then there was the maximum security where the Supreme Intelligence evolves what's left of the Kree into this race called the Rule to use.
There's something in between there, though, with the Avengers Forever where the Supreme Intelligence gets that... Is
crystal.
It Infinity Forever Crystal, I think, which
yep.
enables him to do the stuff in maximum security.
He evolves them. They all look like the Supremer with the tentacly heads, and Earth gets made into a prison colony. But by the time all is said and done, the Kree get re-devolved back to their dead end, their dead yeah. end state. So I don't know.
I mean, I really enjoyed all that stuff. So, you know, even though it ultimately doesn't really, like, there's nothing, like, you get to see all these cool stories and him scheming, but it really doesn't come to, like, another really cool story to cap it off, like, because the cosmic stuff pretty much just sort of ends until it's reinvented again.
And then what happens to the Kree after that is they build themselves back up to help out at least the front lines in the Annihilation event in the 2000s. And that's when Ronan kills the Supreme Intelligence. It's like a mercy kill. And then he takes over as the Emperor of the Kree Empire until he relinquishes control to the Inhumans in that whole yeah. War of Realms thing.
And it's funny that Gladiator then becomes the leader of the Shi'ar.
Right. After that horrible Vulcan character, the third yeah. Summer's brother. Give me a break.
You like Adam X? Extreme!
Yes.
Better.
Yeah, well, after that touching issue where he's with Scott Summers' grandfather in the snow with the plane crash and everything like that, yeah. Yes, he was the third Summers brother as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I always thought he was too. It's just, that character is just funny, though.
No question. Like they, He boils my blood. All right.
I just like when he shows up for two panels and he's just yelling and swearing and drinking and yelling extreme. I'm like, that's pretty much the character.
I gotta say, though, for crossover events, which by and large have been, so many of them have been done to this point, this was a pretty well done as far as the flow of the story going between issues and what the next, making it sort of logical which the next issue is going to be. Like, you have Rick Jones being separated from Wonder Man by the Negaband clique, and that's where the issue ends, and surprise, the next issue is Wonder Man, so that makes sense. You know what I mean? They made it a point to try to make the story, even though they were breaking the teams up into separate groups, they still managed to flow direct the plot so that it made sense which issue it was going into next, for the most part. And I thought for the most part the continuity was maintained, except for them forgetting which characters were captured on the planet there and Lalandra's portrayal of her, you know, where she was, her state of mind and everything was quite a jump between those two issues. And there were a couple of things Andrew pointed out as well. But by and large, I thought they did a real nice job keeping this a tight, straightforward storyline, even though there were seven different creative teams involved.
Yeah, you would think when you hear, like, it's an early 90s mega crossover that there would be a lot more problems. But probably the worst Avengers crossovers, like, come after years, a few years after this. So this is still very solid.
All right, next episode, we should, how about we jump back into doing some recent reads?
I think that sounds good.
Catch up on, I don't mean recent books, just recent things that you've read, because I know I am going to actually go and read a couple of the other Fallout issues from this event, including the What If stories. What if the Avengers had lost Operation Galactic Storm?
Yeah, I'm surprised that was a two-parter.
All right, guys, thanks for joining me on going through this crossover. I've wanted to reread this for probably like 2 years. We've been banging around having it on the list of events we'd like to cover, so I appreciate that you guys joined me on finally getting to it. Can't wait to see what comes next.
Well, it was that movie that really prompted me to get us to read this.
Yeah, Minerva and Atlas were both in the movie. How funny is that?
I know, that's funny.
We'll talk about that next time, too. All right, until the Supreme Intelligence is beaten in an arm wrestling competition, make mine Marvel. Later.